Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello and welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Was Abraham Lincoln gay? That odd question is posed by a book that is getting a lot of attention these days. It's being reviewed in all the major periodicals and newspapers, and frankly, its author would be on a speaking tour were it not for the fact that he's dead. But there's a lot to the story of who he was and why he wrote this book and why it's getting so much attention. We're going to have a special guest and a good discussion about the question of whether Abraham Lincoln was a homosexual and why anyone would even try to write a book to argue such a thing. We can't let today pass without noting that this is the 60th anniversary of the liberation of the Auschwitz concentration camp in Poland. Just to say the word Auschwitz is to conjure up an image of death, sadism, grotesque immorality, and inhumanity. It's hard for most of us to imagine. As a matter of fact, one of the scariest things I've seen in recent years was a poll that indicated that at least half of the people in the United States didn't even know what Auschwitz means, didn't even recognize the name, or they were unable to make a connection between any historical occurrence and that dreaded name. Auschwitz was a place in Poland. It was the home of a concentration camp that became an extermination camp. Construction began in 1940 on the site that grew to 40 square kilometers, that's 15 square miles. There within the camp, there are at least 1.1 million deaths, 1 million of them Jewish. Other victims included Polish political prisoners, gypsies, Soviet prisoners of war, homosexuals, disabled people, and dissidents. Working there were 7,000 Nazi guards, and 750 of them were later prosecuted and punished after the war. The final solution is what's behind all of this. The genius of that was Adolf Eichmann, the evil genius who put this together. You could see a descent in the Nazi ideology from anti-Semitism to a murderous intention to rid the planet of all Jews. It is hard to take into full account just how murderous the Nazi regime really was. But, you know, even as we commemorate here the 60th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz, and we recognize this dark of darkest moments in terms of the 20th century, and we realize what it represents in terms of inhumanity, we need to know that the German people did not just fast forward to Auschwitz. A lot had to happen in order for them to be able to get there. What happened? Let's remind ourselves that these were good German kids, as they would have been understood, who became soldiers in the Wehrmacht and later guards. And so they were the kids who had gone to Sunday school and gone to church and gone to school. They were the kids that other parents' kids would have played with. And then all the civilians working in the camps, not only in Auschwitz and Treblinka and Birkenau, but also in Dachau and others in the nation of Germany itself. They worked in the camp. They were part of a murderous program and murderous regime of genocide. And they went home and petted their pets, their dogs, and their cats, helped their children with their homework, and had dinner. How does a civilized nation, a nation that considers itself civilized, and of course Germany in the mid-20th century was, by any estimation, one of the richest and most educated countries on earth, how in the world did this happen? It is because they began to think of some human beings as unworthy of life. The German expression, we've talked about it on this program before, it came before even the Nazis gained power. It was Lebens und Wertensleben, that is, life unworthy of life. And that's exactly the kind of moral formula that ends up at Auschwitz. But before they got there, they decided that those who were mentally retarded were lives unworthy of life. Those with gross abnormalities were life unworthy of life. Eventually, it became those who were homosexuals, those who were gypsies, those especially who were Jewish, life unworthy of life. On the 60th anniversary of Auschwitz, we had better recognize that the United States of America is going down this same path in terms of deciding that some lives just aren't worthy of life. And as if we needed some kind of prophetic reminder of that, even this week we had the decision of the U.S. Supreme Court to turn back the appeal from Florida Governor Jeb Bush in the case of Terri Schiavo. And thus it looks like this woman is going to be starved to death because the decision has been made that she is not worthy of life. Her husband calling for her death with mixed motivations, very clearly and publicly known. The people of Florida trying to intervene through the governor and the legislature, now the Supreme Court saying that after court appeals, have failed to sustain the people's will of the state of Florida, Mr. Schiavo is going to have the ability to starve his wife to death. Cal Thomas, writing in today's New York Times, says this: if the Terry Schiavo case becomes the new standard for people who are unable to communicate their wishes, it will be increasingly difficult to maintain any standard for life's value beyond what the courts say it is. He concludes, this unraveling of life's threads is leading to a place many people may not wish to go. Having not stopped the unraveling when they could, there is no way they will be able to stop it when they wish. Life is connected. Declare one category unfit to live, and all categories are at risk, like Terry Schiavo's life. I think he's exactly right. This kind of unraveling is happening. You can't just say, we'll stop it later. You have to stop it now. And on the 60th anniversary of the liberation of the Auschwitz death camp, I can't think of anything that would draw our attention more prophetically to the fact that we now face this same unraveling. Many in this culture are now accepting this same formula, life unworthy of life. If Terry Schiavo's life is unworthy of life, who's next? A whole category of persons? Those at the end of life whose medical costs are skyrocketing and becoming simply too high for others to bear, as they think? What about those at the beginning of life who don't have the particular qualities that some parent might want or society might think is normal? What about those who are mentally retarded, have Down syndrome, have other genetic abnormalities, chromosomal differences? What will be next? Who will be next? We're getting accustomed to hearing all kinds of nonsense out of academia. As a matter of fact, many of America's most prestigious universities have become little more than circuses for various ideologies, and you've got all the professors riding their trapezes of ideas, making fools out of themselves and getting paid for it at the same time. Latest example of this comes out of Colorado University. A professor there by the name of Ward Churchill, in an essay recently published, argues that the victims of the 9/11 attacks in New York were not innocent. Instead, they were guilty. They were warriors. This man's gone over the line. He sounds worse even than most of the Islamic militants who have tried to defend from the other side the 9/11 attacks. Ward Churchill's chairman of the Colorado University Ethnic Studies Department, and studying in that department must be a real thrill. His essay was entitled, "Some People Push Back on the Justice of Roosting Chickens." His essay argues that the 9/11 attacks were in retaliation for the Iraqi children killed in a 1991 U.S. bombing raid and by economic sanctions imposed by the United Nations on Iraq following the Persian Gulf War. He contends that the hijackers who crashed airplanes into the World Trade Center and the Pentagon were, quote, combat teams, end quote, not terrorists. Let me just quote this man directly. He said, and I quote, "The most that can honestly be said of those involved on September 11 is that they finally responded in kind to some of what this country has dispensed to their people as a matter of course." Describes the people killed inside the Pentagon as military targets. And I'm reading directly from his text. "And for those in the World Trade Center, well, really, let's get a grip here, shall we? True enough, they were civilians of a sort, but innocent, give me a break." Instead, he described the victims in the World Trade Center as little Eichmanns, referring to Adolf Eichmann, who executed Hitler's plan to exterminate the Jews during World War II. We were just talking about him. Little Eichmanns. That's what this Colorado University professor says. He explains that the 9/11 attacks were a natural and inevitable consequence of what happens as a result of business as usual in the United States. And he ends with the words, "Wake up." Well, wake up, professor. And wake up, public. This is what you're paying for with your tax dollars, people of Colorado. And frankly, it's not just Colorado. Somehow, some way, I can almost guarantee you that some federal grant paid for by people in all 50 states and the various territories is flowing to this man's pocketbook. I got to go to the website and see his picture, by the way. It's pretty much what you'd expect. Why in the world would a university justify having someone like this, who basically now has betrayed his own nation? This isn't the criticism of the United States. This is not some kind of objective, academic, dispassionate discourse about the moral character of the United States. This is not even a revisionist understanding of the 9/11 attacks. This is a direct invitation for people in other nations to attack us. And Colorado University has a professor this ready to justify it. Meanwhile, in Iraq, a yearning for democracy is going to produce a vote on Sunday, and it will be unprecedented in the Arab world, and it will be fascinating to see what happens. But the violence is already threatened. Yesterday, we dealt with the fact that there were leaflets thrown out of cars in Baghdad that said, "If you vote, we will cut off your heads and the heads of your children." Now, U.S. authorities are acknowledging that the danger of a widespread attack there in Iraq is growing as the date of the election on Sunday grows clear. They warn that the first wave may be just to kill as many people as possible in order to get the headlines. and threaten people not to get to the polling places. They also warn about a second wave that could come and actually disrupt the vote itself. We have to pray and hope that won't happen. But one way or another, democracy is going to find its way out there in Iraq as well. Well, American democracy has produced several presidents of outstanding historical caliber, and by any ranking, Abraham Lincoln belongs in the very top rank of that list. And now an author, C.A. Tripp, is arguing that Abraham Lincoln was gay, the first log cabin Republican. We'll be back to discuss this theory and why it matters. I'm Albert Bowler. Well, I'll admit I have a fascination with America's presidents. I have an entire hallway in my library that on both sides is filled with books about the presidency and biographies of virtually all the presidents from Washington to George W. Bush. I got a lot on Lincoln, a fascination with Lincoln. It's hard to know exactly what to do with him. There are so many different Lincolns in terms of interpretation, politically and historically. How in the world did this log splitter from Illinois end up president of the United States? And how did someone from that particular part of the country with a very average education all of a sudden become the most eloquent poet of the American heart in speaking, especially in addresses like his second inaugural address? It's just hard to imagine, or the Gettysburg Address. Where did this man come from, and what does he mean? That's an enduring question for America. But now there's a new question. Out of the blue comes a book by C.A. Tripp. By the way, he died in the year 2003. A sexologist and psychologist and former associate of Alfred Kinsey, and now he's arguing in the book The Intimate World of Abraham Lincoln that Lincoln was a homosexual. And he's amassed all kinds of evidence, he claims, in this book. And boy, he's got some interesting endorsers. Gore Vidal, no, that one's not a shock, but he's got others. He's got people, friends, coming out now that the book is released, saying that now we're going to have to revise our understanding of Abraham Lincoln and understand that perhaps even the poetry of his addresses and the structure of his relationships is understood as homoerotic. I'm here in Louisville, Kentucky, where this show is based, and it's an accusation in this book that the Speed family, indeed Joshua Speed, very well-known patriarch of the city of Louisville, was at one point Abraham Lincoln's lover. Now, I tried to stay away from this book. I saw it in the bookstores, I saw what it was, and I didn't want to pick it up. I didn't want to read it. And that's something, because I have almost everything. I pick almost anything about Lincoln, but not this one. But it drew me into it when I saw the kinds of debates, the kinds of conversations going on in the media and in the book reviews. And one particular article made this book a must-discuss item for us, and that article is entitled Honest Abe, A Dishonest Book Claims Lincoln as the First Log Cabin Republican. It's by Philip Nobly, and he is our guest today. He is a teacher of American history at the Cobble Hill School of American Studies in New York, and he knows this book inside and out because originally he was going to be the book's co-author, but he jumped out before this book jumped into insanity. Mr. Nobly, welcome to the Albert Mueller Program.
Oh, hello.
I'm glad to have you on this program, and I want you to tell us what in the world this book is all about.
Well, it's a fascinating book. It gives an interesting perspective on Lincoln, which I think is valuable. I may disagree with how my former friend, C.A. Tripp, dealt with the data, but I think, and I have said, that the gay Lincoln theory is probably a better explanation of Lincoln's inner life than the straight Lincoln theory. Let me elaborate for a second. Somebody had to be homosexual in the 19th century, right? Although there's very little record of homosexual practice in this country before the 20th century. So let's say, let's posit that, yes, there were homosexuals in those days, but it was difficult to tell. And then you might want to look for some indicators. And it, without even mentioning Lincoln, if I told you that a man at age 51 slept with his bodyguard several nights, let's say, and then you find out, well, actually he slept with his very handsome, intimate friend for 4 years in his late 20s and in his 20s. And then if I told you when he was a boy, he wrote a poem about two boys marrying and have a baby, you'd say, well, wait a minute. Maybe that's very interesting. Maybe this guy was homosexual, even though there's no more evidence than that. If somebody had to be, well, this is the kind of evidence that would at least point you in that direction.
Well, Mr. Mobley, I appreciate that introduction here, but I got to tell you, I've looked at this book and I've read his arguments. And I know a little bit something about the mores and the life ways of America, including rural America, in the 19th century.
Right.
And, there were intense male friendships. You can look at letters. In fact, you don't have to go back just to that period. You can look at the Victorians, and you can find all kinds of letters expressing emotion and all the rest. And the bed sharing also, that was a very common experience up until the early decades of the 20th century.
Sure. But if you were going to investigate someone for possible homosexuality, wouldn't you be more likely to say a man who slept with another man and a man who wrote emotional letters to another man is a better candidate for homosexuality than someone who didn't sleep with his best friend and didn't write him very intense emotional letters?
Yeah, I guess my problem with this kind of psychohistoriography is certainly there are letters and we have the data of the fact that he did share a bed with these people, even though bed sharing was very common. But it seems to me a great leap of the imagination then to come out, because Mr. Tripp in this book doesn't just even argue that there's a possibility of homoerotic attraction on the part of Abraham Lincoln. He tries to argue that he was pervasively homosexual.
Yes, and that's one of the reasons that I broke with my dear friend. I mean, I love this guy. We were friends for 25 years. Good friends, not as good as Lincoln and Speed, but we're close. You know, I'm straight, he was gay, blah, blah, blah. But, you say bed sharing was very common. True, but not the kind of bed sharing that Lincoln had with Joshua Speed. He slept with Joshua Speed for 4 years. That kind of behavior was very rare. Let's say let's toss that out for a second. Turns out that he had a nervous breakdown the day after Joshua Speed told him that he was leaving Springfield and going back to Kentucky.
Okay, Mr. Tripp, we've got time coming to a close here, but I want to ask you, the bottom line question in this is, what difference would it make if indeed Mr. Tripp's theory, let's just take his radical theory, were true? What should we do with that now in the year 2005?
We should revamp all Lincoln biography. Because if he was, let's say, bisexual, we know he wasn't totally gay because he had children. We have to look at his inner life from a new perspective. I mean, what if we found out suddenly that JFK was gay? That would certainly change our understanding of him because he was such an outstanding heterosexual, right?
I'm going to let you make that argument. Go right ahead.
Okay. So basically what it means is we have misunderstood Abraham Lincoln if he was indeed bisexual, and that we now ought to look back at his life and see that his male friendships, if indeed he was sleeping with these fellows in an erotic way, that these male friendships were just friendships. They were loves. That's all.
Mr. Nobley, how much credence should we give this book as a work of history?
Oh, I call it a hoax and a fraud, because he has cooked the evidence to enhance the theory, and he also plagiarized me. That first chapter, except for the bad parts, is mine.
All right. On with us today is Mr. Philip Nobley, who was to be the co-author of this book. We'll be back to join this conversation and invite you to join us as well. The phone number 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. We're talking about the gay Lincoln. Fascinating argument. We'll be right back. I'm Albert Mohler.
You're listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Well, welcome back to the Albert Mohler Program. The topic today is the Gay Lincoln Theory, and we're talking about it because this book's getting a lot of attention and because it is a picture into a world of academic discourse and sexual revolution coming together. Folks, some of these things are even hard to talk about, but you need to know about them. Intelligent Christians need to be aware of what is happening, especially since a lot of the people who do the writing of these books also do the teaching of your kids. Our kids, when they get to college and universities. You know, there are people on the far left, especially among theologians and biblical scholars, who are trying to be advocates for the normalization of homosexuality. And so they've gone back to, for instance, argue that Ruth and Naomi were a lesbian couple, that David and Jonathan were a gay pair. And of course, as you look in the writings of the Old Testament, you look at the interaction between David and Jonathan, there's a great deal of love. But no one in his wildest imagination, up until these homosexual advocates have tried to basically debase the text, would have thought that referred to anything sexual. And as hard as it is to say, there are even some out there writing books about the fact that Jesus had a homoerotic relationship with his disciples. Professor at a seminary up in Chicago that made such an argument. I wrote about it in my commentary just several months ago. And so now what you have among those who are trying to normalize homosexuality is an effort to go back and try to pull out from history all these people and try to make an argument that they were actually gay. Now, some of them probably were. Michelangelo, for instance. All you have to do is look at some of the context about that, and some of that makes sense. But then you start looking at all the rest. I mean, from the movie about Alexander the Great. The books that are coming out trying to argue that everyone from King James I of England to now Abraham Lincoln were gay. Now, I'm going to be honest with you and tell you there's some data that C.A. Tripp pulled up in this book that I don't know what to do with, except I have to say that you go back to the Victorian era, you go back to the 19th century, and you'll find a lot of men writing these kinds of letters, and you'll find a lot of men sleeping together because there weren't that many beds and there wasn't that much money. But to jump from that to romance, homoeroticism, and much less homosexuality is just bizarre. Writing in the New Republic, Christine Stanzel says this, speaking about C.A. Tripp in his book. He wants to trumpet the unassailable truth of Lincoln's homosexuality, or in his more nuanced moments, what he implies to be bisexuality. His bullish proclamations are easily countered, and not just by heterosexists and homophobes, whose attacks he predicts will result from his revelations. In other words, he claims too much. But what are we going to do with this? Let me tell you, this is what I fear. This is what I believe is going to happen. And you heard it, and I didn't know what to expect from Mr. Nobley in this interview. And I got more than I expected, quite frankly. But I'll tell you, one of the things he said is that this should revise our understanding of Lincoln. And I think you're going to be hearing that more and more. I think you're going to hear advocates of this say, well, now that we know that Lincoln was gay, just as if it's been proved, when nothing of the sort has taken place. I want you to join the conversation. The phone number 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Let's go to Michael calling from Riverview, Florida. Michael, go right ahead.
Paul, was that just because I called too much? Or
Michael, are you there?
Yes, sir.
You're on the air. Go right ahead.
Yes. I'm calling because I saw this gentleman on TV the other day, and when I did, it brought to mind something from a very reputable conservative Christian professor. And he's the president of a classical school in Tennessee, and he actually mentioned these same things when he spoke at our church and when we discussed revisionist history from a Christian worldview. And he's not a kook or a, you know, leftist, you know, way out there or anything like that. And he said, yes, Abraham Lincoln was bisexual, and he mentioned the draft riots and how things have been revised, and you know, just he said, be careful what you read, and he mentioned when to, what books to buy and all that, and you know, I don't know about all of these claims that this gentleman is making, but that was confirmed to me by a very reliable Christian writer, a theologian and historian. So I just
Michael, I just want to say, but on what evidence? In other words, what was the evidence of this? Was that just his historical judgment, or did he summon some concrete evidence we can all look at?
Well, he didn't pull out verse and pull out the paper, but. I respect him. He's a very reliable historian. I'd give you his name if I was allowed to, but I can't.
Yeah, all right. Well, I appreciate your call, Michael. Folks, here's your opportunity to join the conversation. The number's 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Abraham Lincoln has always been one of the most controversial figures in American history. But until now, the controversy's been over his presidential leadership in particular, his abolitionism, the approach he took to the Civil War, his defense of the Union, suspension of habeas corpus, and all the rest. Now it's his sex life that's an issue. Something tells me that the great emancipator didn't expect this to be the great news of 2005. We'll be right back. I just have to admit right up front that Abraham Lincoln is one of the hardest figures in American history to figure out. There are basically two different visions of Abraham Lincoln presented by historians. On the one side, you have Abraham Lincoln, the great virtuous hero. And, of course, that's the main picture in American history. That's why the Lincoln Memorial is right there on the mall, anchoring the mall on the capital city, Washington, D.C. And then, of course, you also have on the other side the Lincoln, the dictator, the usurper of power, the perverter of American ideals. And let me tell you, there are arguments about this that just go round and round and round. On the one side are those who say, look at the effect of Abraham Lincoln. Look, he saved the Union. He was the great emancipator. He accomplished all this and became a martyr for the cause. And on the other side, there are those who say, yes, but he simply used slavery as an issue for political power. He used the Civil War as a justification for usurping all kinds of federal authority. And that argument could go on and on and on, and that's not today's argument. That's just to concede the fact that we're dealing with a very complicated and convoluted story here. But this imposition of homosexuality to the midst of it is one of the most confusing things I've seen in a long time, because it is an effort, I think, to try to look at a 19th century man in his 19th century relationships with the 21st century new ways of historical revisionism, trying to go back and look at documents and look at incidents and all the rest and try to read today's sexualized consciousness and basically pro-homosexual culture onto Abraham Lincoln. And, of course, C.A. Tripp, the late author of this book, just cobbles together all this evidence. And the worst part of this book is where he starts saying where there is no evidence, that just shows you how repressed he was. Well, that kind of interpretation will get you nowhere except into whatever you want it to be. You can then just make Abraham Lincoln into a Gumby of whatever sexual proclivities you want to invent. Let's go to Christy calling from Louisville, Kentucky, listening on WFIA. Christy, go right ahead.
Mr. Mueller, I just want to say I really enjoy your program first.
Well, thank you.
And when I first heard you talking about this, I mean, my mouth dropped over, and I'm like, you're kidding me. I cannot believe someone would devote the time and research to actually try to dig up stuff like this to write such a book. And I wanted to know why. What's the point? But as I thought about it further, I thought, and I just want to comment and then I'll hang up. But in my opinion, it's an attempt to mainstream homosexuality. I mean, the more we hear about books like this, the more desensitized we become and eventually maybe think, oh, you know, this is okay. Abraham Lincoln, a great president. You know, maybe he was homosexual, and somehow it just kind of desensitizes people and making them think it's okay, and I'll hang up.
Well, Christy, thanks for your call. I think you pretty much hit it right at the center of the bullseye. I mean, I think that is the big agenda. And, of course, this goes back to the biography, not of Abraham Lincoln, but of C.A. Tripp. C.A. Tripp was a perverse individual. He was one of the closest associates of Alfred Kinsey. And, of course, we've been talking about Alfred Kinsey on this program, especially with the release of the Kinsey movie. But there are some things I can't even say on the air about the research that Alfred Kinsey, I can't even come close to it, Alfred Kinsey conducted. And C.A. Tripp was right at the center of that, his closest associate, who was involved in one of the most perverse experiments I could imagine. You know, Kinsey's effort was to try to normalize all kinds of perversity. Homosexuality is just a part of that, but a big part of it. And C.A. Tripp is very much a part of that. He's also the author of a book entitled The Homosexual Matrix, in which he makes very similar arguments. You know, I think, Christy, you're exactly right. I think this is an effort to say, hey, great heroes of history have been homosexual. Homosexuality is just normal. These people were too repressed to be able to show it. Look, poor Abraham Lincoln had to marry Mary Todd Lincoln just to try to prove to the culture he wasn't homosexual. La-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. I want to tell you the main reason I believe Abraham Lincoln was not a homosexual. And I will stand on this, and I got to tell you, I consider this Albert Mohler's common sense theory of history. If Abraham Lincoln had been homosexual, I think somebody would have mentioned it. You know, he had enemies. Abraham Lincoln had enemies that killed him. What sense does it make that they would be complicit in hiding the fact that he was a homosexual? Let me tell you, you out Abraham Lincoln in 1864, and you've got a former president of the United States. Can you imagine Abraham Lincoln testifying before the media? I did not have sex with that man, Joshua Speed. I don't think so. This is absolute insanity to me, and that's why I look at it and I say, where's the big question here? The big question is, how in the world could this have been covered up all this time, not only by Lincoln's friends, but by his enemies? And the man had enemies beyond, you know, Bill Clinton thinks he has enemies. He keeps talking about them in the press. Whined about them when he was in office. But Abraham Lincoln had enemies. Let's go to Kate calling from New Albany. Kate, go right ahead.
Hi, I am actually calling because I think that it is kind of a travesty that at the same point that they would go ahead and put this in the history books, they would not put in the history books that Abraham Lincoln was a Christian. So we could go ahead and put in the history books and in the textbooks that he was a homosexual but not a Christian. That I find laughable.
Kate, I appreciate your call. You know, Abraham Lincoln's Christianity or his spirituality, however you want to phrase it, it's another one of the problematic areas of his life, because he certainly was deferential to Christianity, but he was never baptized, was never the member of any church. And it's interesting, the language he uses about God is very conceptual. But Kate, you raise a good point. I guarantee you, if they discovered a bunch of letters that indicated that Abraham Lincoln was a closet evangelist, they wouldn't be writing these books and they wouldn't be getting the attention in the New York Times and other newspapers. Let's go to Charlie calling from Springfield, Illinois. Well, how about that for a Lincoln show? Charlie, go right ahead.
Hey, Dr. Mohler, great show. Love your program. The problem we have is people are perverting just the meaning of love in this century and last century. We have no concept of what true love is, secular-wise anyway. It's like how we read the Bible today. Without a good found understanding of what the relationship people had with Jesus back in the beginning, how are we going to understand how it relates to that?
Yeah, Charlie, don't you think a part of the problem is that people are trying to read sex into what was basically just an expression of genuine love?
Yeah, almost definitely. That's what I was saying. We perverted the meaning of love to mean sex. And it really has, it's a byproduct, but it's not a main focus of love.
Yeah, I think that's a very important point, Charlie. I really appreciate your call, because I think when you just look at, for instance, the letters that were written, and by the way, that was back in an age when people wrote letters. Look at the letters written by soldiers during the Civil War. Look at letters written by brothers, the James brothers, for instance, as in Henry James, the American man of letters and author. You look at these letters. Are you going to read that? And of course, in that case, not only homosexuality, but I guess brotherly incest. No one believes it was about sex. It was about brotherly love. And let me tell you, especially in the crucible of war, great bonds of affection develop between men, and it's not about sex. It's about camaraderie and about the friendship that can be developed, especially under the line of fire. We'll be back with some final thoughts. I'm Albert Mohler. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is the start, but it won't be the end. We're talking about C.A. Tripp's book, The Intimate World of Abraham Lincoln. It's, it's a revisionist history at its most revisionist worst. It's an effort to try to argue for the normalization of homosexuality by going back to Abraham Lincoln and arguing that that most famous president of the mid-19th century was homosexual. Now, this is where honesty really has to come into the picture. And I'm going to be honest with you and say that there is evidence in this book that I don't know exactly what to do with. But I think we have to go back to the context of 19th century relationships, and we have to go back to the context of 19th century mores and understanding that bed sharing and this kind of intimacy was very common. And then who knows? Who can get in the mind of Abraham Lincoln? I can't. But I'll tell you this, I think it's a lot more difficult to get into the mind of Abraham Lincoln from the year 2005 than from 1865. And I'll go back to Mueller's common sense theory of history. I can just promise you that if Abraham Lincoln was known to have been gay, someone would have mentioned it in the 19th century, and his enemies would have driven him out of office by the use of it. And there's no way that would just be one missing issue from Abraham Lincoln's resume as president of the United States. Now, Lincoln is still one of the most controversial figures in the history of the United States, and that was true in the 19th century. It's true now. There is a very firm and determined band of anti-Lincoln scholars, and they have an argument. But this effort to bring sex into it, I find to be an insidious representation of American academia at its worst. And like I say, this is the start, it won't be the finish. How long before we have a gay George Washington, a gay FDR, a gay Eisenhower and Truman, and you can go all the way through it. Now, we are the Christians who know that every single human being is a sexual sinner. And we're the ones who know, based upon the revelation of the Bible, that every one of us has a distrustful heart. I just debated the issue of homosexuality today on a taped national broadcast that will soon be out. And, you know, I had to say on that program, again, arguing with a minister from the Metropolitan Community Church that we don't get to decide what homosexuality is. God's decided that. But we don't decide that homosexuality is the only sexual sin. We know there are any number of sexual sins. We just can't ignore anything the Bible teaches or disobey anything the Bible teaches. And thus we have to say that sin must be acknowledged as sin, must lead to repentance. We are the people as Christians who know that every single human being is a sexual sinner, at least in the heart. Jesus made that very clear in the Sermon on the Mount. But this revisionist history, it's another thing altogether. We'll be back tomorrow to talk about the 30-somethings and the 20-somethings who won't grow up. I'll meet you then.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmoeller.com. You'll find archives of past shows, Dr. Mueller's daily crosswalk commentary, and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmoeller.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mueller Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.